This is the time. This is the place. So we look for the future. But there's not much love to go around. Tell me why this is a land of confusion.
I just want to thank Phil Collins and his generation for putting it right. Am I right?
They did a great job.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job.
I can't believe you're doing Jem Hunt the Musical too.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
Jem Hunt the Musical. Anyway, hopefully the Genesis reference will make sense shortly. I think it does, but, you know, we'll get there. And welcome to Jem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where these three dirty doggies pick a horror film with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. We watch that son's a bitch, we jump on the mics, and we talk about whether we think it's a horror gem or straight-up diarrhea.
Oh.
My name is Cody, and if you don't give me $250,000, my head is literally going to explode.
I'm Buggy. And I can't think of an intro today.
Oh, boy.
Ooh.
I know. Just really trying to.
You're doing great work. I'm Beth, and every time I see the words pizza bomber, I think it says pizza Bodmer. And that's my last name, and I am the pizza Bodmer.
You just doxed yourself.
I did. I'm not doxed. But really, pizza Bodmer has a nice ring to it.
It does. And that's who you are in real life.
And learn how to spell it. I mean, no one knows how to spell it.
True. So it occurred to me that by the time this episode comes out, we will have been doing this podcast for an entire year.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So this is kind of our 1 year anniversary episode.
Aw, you guys.
Shit. And I couldn't think of an intro.
Haha.
Fuck. You fucking suck. Fumbled it.
Yeah. We released our first episode on June 9th, 2024. And just for the history books, we reviewed a little film called Heart of Midnight, which was a good movie. So we started out with a bang. Yeah, we've been doing this for a year. I hope we got better. I don't know if we did. It doesn't matter. What else? Let's see. We watched a documentary miniseries last night about the Tylenol murders from the 80s, which is a case I knew about, but I didn't know any details. And yeah, I thought it was interesting. Kind of horror adjacent, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you to my sister, the true crime buff in the family, for, I guess you are too.
Yeah, I'm kind of like backing down because it's been making me get weird.
It's weird, but it was interesting. Yeah, it was like of a time.
For sure. You got any updates?
We went to see a really great movie called Secret Mall Apartment.
Woo!
It was really awesome. It was about these kids, no, adults, 20-somethings that were students at RISD and their Rhode Island School of Design and their teacher, and how they moved into a mall that had like gentrified their neighborhood and taken down like a cultural landmark. The next phase of it was taking it down. So they are like, all right, we're going to move in. And they filmed everything. And I would really recommend it. It's just sort of like a really cool little, you know, like make you realize that art matters sort of deal.
For sure.
I thought it
was good too.
I feel like no. I jacked it. Jacked
no, I wasn't going to say anything. It was your update. I wasn't even going to mention it because it wasn't horror. But it was good. I recommend it.
Gentrification is horrifying.
I suppose so.
You know what else is horrifying? The Rose Festival. That's my other update. You have anything to say? Just kidding. It's lovely. For those of us that work downtown, how do you feel about the Rose Festival?
Well, I mean, luckily because buses are like such a easy solution, it's not terrible, but it does kind of suck because there's like parades all day, specifically like this weekend, I think. Or it might have been all week.
Starlight was Friday.
Yeah, Starlight was, well, no, it was a Saturday. The Starlight Whatever. Parade was Saturday. And that parade, I hate it. And just because I had to walk across the bridge one time it was happening. Mm. And my dad got stuck on a highway to Salem and was like super mad about that.
Highway to Salem.
As the musical.
Perfect.
Yeah, I just thought we'd do some hyper local updates.
Yeah, why not?
Portland, Oregon.
Maybe there'll be more. Yeah. Okay, we got a movie to talk about. Beth selected this movie for the evening. What are we reviewing?
It's called Abruptio.
Ooh, Abruptio. And I know the answer to this, but how did you happen upon this film?
I don't remember. Did I just see it like on the like you might like when we were fucking watching TV?
I believe so.
Okay, so I saw it on the you might like when we were fucking watching TV.
Yeah.
Nice, nice. Yeah.
Totally. So I had heard about this movie when it was playing at festivals a year ago or so, but for whatever reason, I didn't pay much attention to it at the time. And I do want to note, and this is a critical piece about this movie, it's all puppets. Very lifelike and uncanny puppets, which we will discuss a bit later. And that is why I was singing Land of Confusion at the start of this. Mm. If you don't know and you've never seen the music video for Land of Confusion, it's all puppets. So I thought I'd sing some Genesis in honor of a puppet movie.
And it's like angry Phil Collins at parts.
Yeah. This movie, fun fact, is based off of Phil Collins' life.
Oh, it says Phil.
Holy shit.
Phil Collins biopic. I'm kidding. Biopic. I will never say biopic.
Biopsy.
It's a Phil. No.
No, okay. I never joke about Phil Collins' biopsy.
No.
In this house.
Mm-mm. Or mine.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into some details. No. So this was released in festivals in 2023, it had its theatrical release in 2024, and I think that also included a digital release and whatnot. This was written and directed by Evan Marlowe. The character design was Janine Hook. The key puppet fabricator was Jeffrey S. Farley. He was a special effects guy that worked on The Blob, Pet Sematary, Alien 3, a bunch of other things. So he was a kind of a seasoned veteran here.
So he's old. Yeah, he must be old.
Yeah.
So he's old.
Yep. The lead puppeteer was Danny Montooth, which I like that name. When I was a kid, my doctor was Dr. Mantooth.
Oh, that's a hell of a name.
Yeah.
Dope.
Mantooth. The Manitou. Yeah. So this is starring, and we got some legit horror credentials in the cast here, or should I say the voice cast, because as we noted, this is puppets. James Marsden plays Les Hackle. That's kind of our lead character here. Jordan Peele is Danny. You know Jordan Peele. He's becoming a horror legend himself. We got Robert Englund as Mr. Salk, so Fred fucking Krueger's got his voice in here.
Mm-hmm.
Sid Haig plays Sal, the late Sid Haig. This was his last role, actually.
And can I just quickly interject that I looked up Sid Haig today and I saw listed on the internet his cause of death was complication. So that's
suspicious.
Yeah. Complication. He was 80.
Suspicious.
Anyway.
Who killed him?
Yeah.
Complication.
Christopher McDonald plays Police Chief Richter. Police cheese.
Police cheese. Wiz Khalifa.
If you don't know Christopher McDonald's name, you probably know him as Shooter McGavin. And I also want you to file his name away in your mind for a bit, because I might come back to it. And then we got Hannah Mae Lee as Chelsea. Where can you watch this son of a bitch? It's actually on Just Watch for free, which is the site I use to find out where you can watch all of our Gem Hunt movies. I didn't even know they had movies on there to watch, so that's something I learned. It's free on YouTube. It's on FlixFling, the Roku channel, Pluto TV, Plex, Darkroom. You can rent it on Amazon, Apple TV, Fandango, Google Play Movies. There is also a DVD and a Blu-ray release. We rented the DVD at Movie Madness because that's all they had, and that's that. So what is this darn movie about?
All right. Bear with me because I can't see a thing without my glasses.
Aww.
Well, she has them on, so.
I have them on.
No excuses.
But I'm not going to say they're clean. Okay, so main character in this movie is Les, who we're introduced to. There's like some naked lunchy jazz playing in the background. He's a clock watching office loser kind of guy. He's a puppet. Everyone's puppets, as we said. The puppets are fucking incredible looking. It's really kind of draws you in because it's really impressive. So he's a loser. He lives with his mom. His girlfriend just dumped him. And he's talking to his friend Danny late at night. And then it's like they both have bombs implanted in the back of their necks.
Shit.
And whoever put the bombs there threatens detonation if they don't do tasks that they're going to be assigned. And the tasks are gnarly. They're like murdery and stuff. Danny refuses to follow the orders that he's given, so he blows up. Les has to gas his entire office in order to not get blown up, bombed, whatever, blown up, detonated, bomb blown up. I don't know. And he does it. He just does it. Later, he goes to a bar and he meets this kind of Rodney Dangerfield-esque comedian named Saul. Saul also has a neck bomb. Saul tries to make Les have a drink. It's a little detail, but I think it's important because it keeps happening throughout the movie. It's like there's something to it. It is an important plot point. Les and Saul are tasked with murdering a suburban family in their home. Huh. And they do. Like, these things keep happening. It's like you're going to blow up. And so everyone keeps murdering people. Then after they murder the family, which is pretty gruesome, they're instructed to kill one another. So Les murders Saul with a shovel. The cops get Les and they put him in the confessional, which is like some electric shock therapy shit.
Shock his balls.
They do shock his balls. They do attach electrodes to his ball sack. Yes.
Any clearer? There's nothing to confess. I would really hate to be your scrotum right about now.
Works every time.
Yeah.
Doesn't work actually on him.
But yeah, no, he doesn't know what they want him to confess to. And but it is kind of weird because he's just like been murdering. But yeah, he's like, what do you want me to confess to? What's the crime? And they can't articulate that to him, so he doesn't confess. They let him go. He wakes up on the side of the road with a paper that says, think. Well, we'll get into this later. This movie kind of mirrors a real life story. So just remember, he has this thing that says, think, on his body. He meets a dude named Clive. They do more crimes. And then he meets a girl named Chelsea. They go back to the suburban murder house. And they bury the bodies of the family, and they find out that both Saul and Les have barcodes on their bodies. Throughout all of this, anytime a TV is on, first of all, it's animation. If there's a TV on in the scene, it's cartoon. But we see that the United States is in, like, total chaos. The president's been assassinated. The Statue of Liberty is on fire. So Les and Chelsea, the girl, they meet another guy, and then they have to send these dead bodies through, like, this giant fan thing.
Hell yeah.
And to chop them up. One of the bodies turns out to be Les's ex-girlfriend that broke up with them at the beginning of the movie. He fails to complete the task. He doesn't blow up. And then they find a USB drive in Saul's belly. It has some code and some weird symbols on it. Also, Les opens a door and it's like this Beetlejuicy hellscape, like a desert weird thing. There's some like alien shit. Les tries some good old self-harm, and then he goes to see his doctor. We get into a sort of like, is he crazy? Is this really happening kind of situation? And then we get alien human babies who are growing kind of like motel hell style, like cabbages. Like, they're growing out of the ground. It's weird.
I love cabbage.
Yeah, I love cabbage. I don't really like alien babies growing out of the ground. There's an amusement park chase situation. He's got problems with his mom, and then he has more cop problems, and then there's a big plot twist, which I'm not going to reveal, and I'm just kind of curious to see. We'll talk around it as we talk about the movie, and it affected the movie, I think, in some ways. I don't know.
That's, I think so, yeah.
Basically it.
Yeah.
Unless, did I miss something?
I think there's, like, one thing to mention, which is, like, foreshadowing for, like, kind of the twist and parts of the movie's like ending and like making sense of what was really happening is at the very beginning. I don't think you mentioned this, but before like Les goes to visit his friend Danny, who blows up, there's this weird scene where there's like this little girl by the side of the road.
Yeah.
No, she's not on a bike, actually. She's literally
just standing there.
And then this weird person comes up behind her. It's like this really tall, looks like a man in a trench coat with gloves on. And they push her into the road right in front of Les's car.
Mm-hmm.
And like he doesn't hit her, but it's really weird. And I don't remember like if she disappeared or something.
That's important, yeah.
But like whoever pushed her to like ran away immediately. And it's sort of like this weird event where he's kind of like strangely casual about it. Like, he's kind of like, that was weird. And he's like telling Danny about it too. Like, that was just kind of weird. But it seems like weirdly important. It's just like a random thing. And it's like, who's this trench coat person? What's the deal with that? What's the significance of that happening?
That is, yeah. No, I think that is, you're right. I'm sorry that I left that out. Because yes, that is another thing that will come to bear on the twist.
And I think it's like the first sign too of like, okay, things are not normal. Like there's something obviously kind of strange going on with Les, unbeknownst to him. Like he's definitely like more important in some way than he like thinks he is.
And that's part of the like, I saw, I think this is a good time. I read this quote that said this, this movie, the animation is scraping the sides of Uncanny Valley. That was from a site called Horror DNA. And I'm like, yeah. And the use of the puppets allows it to be that kind of weird, like, you know, what is actually happening.
So
good point. Yeah, that car thing is important. Because at first it's like, he's just an office guy. You know, there's weird music and stuff. But that is like the first weird event.
And you don't like really think about it. Like I forgot that even happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is just like, it ends up being important. So.
And it's also kind of horror-y because of the
it's weird. Yeah. It's like, it's a weird thing.
Weird person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who might be a perp. Like I wrote that and I was like, is it a pedo? But then you don't really see them.
No, they're like just gone.
Yeah. Good recap. And as you could probably tell, once this movie really gets rolling, it goes batshit crazy off the rails pretty quick. Like, you don't know what the fuck's going on. It's all crazy. Les, the main character, is kind of in the same boat. Just like, what's happening? I'm just going along with it. Maybe note that he's also an AA. I think that's kind of important.
And then forcing the drinks on him. And yet, no, I read something that was sort of like, he is just a go with the flow guy. Like he is not really making any decisions. He's just sort of like, okay, you know, like his friend Danny's like, I'm not going to do that. And then he blows up, but Les is like, okay, I guess this is what I have to do.
Yeah. And he kind of like towards the end, like fights back or like has his own opinions and like free will.
Right.
But he kind of reminds me of like Bo from Bo is Afraid that for is a lot of it. That is the other
thing I
like he's just very I much also. I found this
other quote that said, he's like, it's like a foam. The movie is like a foam rubber covered Bo is Afraid.
Yeah, like it is. It kind of reminds me or is reminiscent of that because I feel like the two main characters are similar in the fact that they like can't really like do anything and they're like very scared and basically all these just fucked up things happen to them and it's like, are they crazy?
Right.
Is this just how they perceive the world around them? Why are they like so unable to do literally anything? At all.
Yeah, they're, I mean, it's just like your archetypal loser.
Yeah, but it's also, I feel like characters like that are kind of like a way for like the audience to relate to where it's like, it's this, you know, it's kind of like if we were just randomly put in this situation, it's like, what would you do? Honestly, you'd probably also just be confused as fuck.
Yeah, we'll get into that, I think, but I think it is... I don't know. I didn't find him super relatable. Yeah.
I mean, not like based off of like him as a person, but I just mean like it's just like a character who's like, what the fuck is happening?
Right.
And you two are like, what the fuck is even happening?
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. So here's the deal. We can't talk about this movie without mentioning the bizarre pizza bomber case, which Beth alluded to in the intro. And if you haven't heard about the pizza bomber, which I'm surprised some people still haven't, buckle up. This is a real case. I recall seeing it on the news at the time it was happening. It was really crazy. And then as you learn more about it, it becomes even more crazy. So here's a quick recap of that. In 2003, a pizza delivery man named Brian Wells in Erie, Pennsylvania, set out to make a delivery at the end of his shift. About an hour later, Wells showed up at a local bank with a shotgun disguised as a cane and a locked metal collar around his neck containing two pipe bombs and two kitchen timers set to go off in 15 minutes. He slid a note to the teller requesting $250,000, noting that if the request wasn't met in the 15-minute time period, the bomb would go off. This was all part of an elaborate scavenger hunt that was documented in a series of notes that the perpetrators had handed off to Wells before sending him to rob the bank. Apparently, if Wells was able to steal the money and complete this list of tasks, he'd ultimately find instructions for removing the collar bomb. Unfortunately, he was apprehended by law enforcement, and the time between the robbery and the second task and left to sit in a parking lot as the cops assessed what the hell was going on with the bomb. Wells claimed that a group of black men had forced him to wear the collar at gunpoint and rob the bank. The cops made no effort to disarm the bomb, and less than an hour after the robbery had taken place, the bomb detonated, blowing a hole in Wells' chest and killing him instantly. Mm-hmm. There's a shit ton of other weird details in this case, and we're not going to get into it because this is not about the pizza bomber. It's about Abruptio. But is there anything else you want to note about that?
I just want to say, I think this is maybe something that I didn't say in my recap. So the other parallel, so we have the device, but the fact that throughout Abruptio, Les does tell the authorities and other people that he has a bomb implanted.
Oh, good point.
And they don't believe him. And then eventually he does get a scan where they find it. So it is sort of like, it definitely parallels it in that way where he's like, I have a bomb on me. And everyone's like, you're crazy. But he does have a bomb on him.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah.
So there's a Netflix documentary and a book if you want to dig into this further. It gets pretty kinda wild. Yeah.
They're not the greatest. It's like a really fascinating story, but the way the, I don't know. I have read the book because I was in this true crime book club. Against my will, I was just floating along like a lesser bow. And the documentary is maybe like, they made it a little longer than it needed to be, but it's a fucking fat. Did you watch anything about it?
I mean, you sent me like the BuzzFeed video.
That thing sucked.
But still, it was like a, it was, oh,
well, that's rude because I was going to, what I was going to say is I really like BuzzFeed Unsolved because I grew up watching them.
This is one of your stories.
But that particular episode, I was a little disappointed.
Why do they put I really like them. I don't like their true crime as much, but they do Unsolved and they do like, episodes where they go to like haunted buildings and the whole trope is
that's why that guy was familiar to me.
That's the whole reason, like the whole trope is that Ryan, the one guy, is like a very much a believer and then Shane is a skeptic.
It's like Scully and Mulder.
It's just all they do is they go to haunted places and Ryan like shits his pants and Shane just like, I don't know, runs around saying fuck you to like these suspected ghosts and demons.
Fuck you, ghost.
Literally he'll just be like, say something now. Fuck you.
I have seen you watch this and that's why it was familiar. But yeah, anyway, like Pizza Bomber is fascinating.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
There is no way this movie did not take the idea of the neck bomb from the Pizza Bomber.
Yeah, that was gonna be my question. Is this just a coinky dink or
I mean, it might not be. I don't know. There's also like a collar like that in The Running Man, though. Like, that's not like
that's
a new
true.
Concept.
That's true. That's a good point.
Maybe that's where the pizza bomber got the idea.
Yeah.
From The Running
Bam.
Know me a soda pop.
Okay.
I think so. In 2003, I was pregnant with you and I was certainly not tuned into news, you know? So I didn't hear about it till later. But I think it was, like you're saying, I think it was one of those things like, what's a true crime? Oh, like the fucking van life girl.
Yeah.
Even I know about that and I don't follow.
It was super sensational.
Yeah, Gabby Petito. Like, it was one of those things where, like, if you were alive and you were not living the alternative lifestyle, you knew it was happening.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So, yeah, we wanted to bring that up just because we felt there was undeniable similarities between the situation in Abruptio and the Pizza Bomber case. And that was the first thing I thought about when I even read the description.
And that's why we wanted to watch it, actually.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit, is this a pizza bomber? Which it wasn't, but...
This is the Pizza Bodmer.
Yeah, the Pizza Bodmer. Okay, let's get into one of the key aspects of this film, which is puppetry. As we noted, all the characters in this movie are lifelike, life-sized puppets, which... are very strange, and it adds this whole sort of uncanny element to the movie. So during an interview in April of 2020, Evan Marlowe, the director, described the film as a puppet movie using only realistic lifelike hand puppets in actual settings. He compared it to other puppetry films like Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal, and he also noted that this sort of thing has never been done. The Dark Crystal comes close, though there... the designers weren't bound by the confines of reality. We're adrift in uncharted seas, which I thought was kind of an interesting quote about his approach to making this puppet movie.
Wait, so they were hand puppets?
Well, it was described like just as the hand way, puppets.
Like,
yeah.
Like the of the Jim Henson.
Yeah.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah, they are. Classic I believe puppets. They're being controlled by puppeteers, cool. Not like just puppet costumes.
Yeah, which I mean, that's people weird. Wear. There's no. Yeah. Because that's what we were saying. They were so big. We're like, are they costumes? But then yeah, you're not a puppet.
I think they're pretty close to life size.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, if you think about the Muppets and you think about like the band and stuff. And what's the big, huge guy? You know what I'm talking about? The guy who like runs through things with the shaggy hair that I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I know what you're talking about.
And Big Bird. And
Doctor something.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And apparently this film took 7 years to make, which makes sense because the puppetry is very elaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also one of those films that got hit with the dreaded COVID shutdown, unfortunately. Yeah. So.
And you have to be in real life to like, totally. I mean, this is definitely a like collaborative, like many people in a room kind of movie.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the use of these lifelike puppets? What did it add to the film? Was it effective? Did it do something that changed your mind about how you felt about the film in one way or another? Any thoughts on that?
I think like probably the fact that it is puppets is kind of like the most appealing aspect of the film. Like, I don't think like it would have been as interesting to me if it wasn't a puppet film. Cause also I fucking love puppets. I love movies with puppets. I'm a big fan of like elaborate animated films, and I think it's just fun. It's like a creative way to make a horror movie, and I think with the puppets too, it gave these, you know, puppeteers and like the director more room to do like gross stuff and creative things, mm-hmm. which I like. So I think that like elevated it, making it more interesting. And I like how weird the puppets look too. Like, it adds like a disturbing element, and especially when shit starts to go down and things get more like icky, the like use of these weird human-esque kind of gross puppets adds to like the overall like uncomfortableness of what's occurring, and it looks really cool too.
Yeah, the puppets do look cool.
They look dope.
They look super cool, and I'm the opposite of you, as both of you know. Like, I really struggle with things that aren't live action. Obviously, I love like some of the classics, and I can handle stop motion, but I really struggle with animation. It's hard. It's something just my brain can't. But I think the puppet element was the best part of this movie. They were so fucking impressive because they were uncanny. They were so like almost real, but not quite in that uncanny way where you're like, it was impressive.
Yeah, that's what I was going to note too, is that they look real, but there's something off about them. Mm-hmm. Like just the way they're eyes and their mouths move, it's super creepy. And so you're immediately kind of like, what the fuck am I watching when you're seeing these puppets moving around and looking almost like real people but just not quite, and definitely kind of puts you on edge. Just a couple other notes about puppets. So the director was asked why did you decide to do puppets? And he couldn't really remember, but he said his wife could remember that he woke up from a dream where everyone was a lifelike puppet. And that kind of gave him the idea to try to develop a movie that was all puppets.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool. And technically, it was also a strategic choice because he liked the idea that he could bring in all these actors to do the voice work and then spend as much time as he wanted fabricating the puppets and crafting the film. So he had all this voice work done kind of from the get-go. Yeah.
Okay.
And then they went back and synced all the puppetry to the voice actors' performances.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah. And it was a very creative, collaborative effort with Jeff Farley, the puppet fabricator. And the director was sending kind of references to things from the internet. And the fabricator was kind of working off the sound of the voice performances. And so they kind of worked together to create all these creepy puppets.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into one other element that I think is interesting, which is the voice acting. Because obviously we don't have real life actors. We got puppets voiced by actors. And the first thing I wanted to do is give big props to all the cameo performances. Mm-hmm. Because as noted, we got Jordan Peele as Danny. and he's like a party boy, and his voice is wild.
No, I don't know how it is. I'm Dan the fucking man. I had to put in a revolving door to handle all my bitches. Pardon me.
Sid Haig plays a pathetic old stand-up comic, as noted, and does a really great job there.
Where can you find a dog with no legs? Exactly where you left them. What do you call a boomerang that don't work? A stick. Why can't you hear a pterodactyl pissing? Because the pee is silent. A psychopath.
His jokes are fire. No, I'm kidding.
Robert Englund's Mr. Salt character is completely unhinged.
It was a schoolhouse. There must have been 36 children inside. Molotov, cocktails. Most of them perished with the fire, the others ran. They ran, but they were still on fire. That's how they died. Running and screaming and trying to put out the flames. They kept burning even after they died. Oh God, the sound, crackling flesh, the smell was... Some of those kids will survive, scarred for life. That's no way to live.
That's the guy that has him put the parts through the big fan, by the way. I forgot to say his name, and that's important.
And then Christopher McDonald's police.
Sorry to hear about your girlfriend, Mr. Hackle. We had a Scotty dog that died once. The missus and I had its throat ripped out by a pack of coyotes. Wandered right up our street in broad daylight. They're not afraid of anything. Anyway, horrible way to go.
So all of the kind of big name cameo actors, I think, did a really, really great job in this. But I got to say, if you didn't know who the voice actors were for these characters, I don't think you'd be able to pin it on any of those actors. Like, you wouldn't be able to be like, oh, that's definitely Jordan Peele, or that's definitely Robert Englund.
Yeah, they weren't playing it that way, which sometimes that's the draw. You know, Buggy and I were talking about this, I think, about like the Ponyo thing, where it's like you get Tina Fey to do the voice in the American version. And it's like, that's a draw. You know, it's like, these are the people who do the voices, and you hear them, you're like, oh my God.
And Christian Bale.
That's Christian Bale. That's Will Ferrell. That's whatever. And in this, it wasn't that at all.
Yeah.
It, they were acting.
I had to look up who was who afterwards, or like during the movie, because I was like, I know these actors are in this, but I don't know whose voices belongs to which puppet.
That's kind of a cool way to play it. So James Marsters, who is Spike from Buffy, which we were kind of talking about before, he's Les, the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a more flat, it's supposed to be, though.
I think so, yeah. That's what I was going to say, is the main characters, kind of Les, and then Chelsea to some extent.
Yeah.
They felt a bit flat to me.
Yeah. And I think maybe they are supposed to be, because they are like people with some different issues that would maybe make you flat. I don't know.
Yeah, at least with Les's character, I feel like it fits. Like, he's not really supposed to be like super, you know, animated. Like, yeah, like expressive. He's not like a passionate person in like any way. His character is like obviously like a burnt out, tired, low self-esteem having man who's like, mom will not stop fucking
The mom is quite a thing.
I mean, like, I get it, that, but she just wants him out of her house, but like at that point, just kick him out. Like, she's so mean to him.
So I was thinking about this, and I was wondering if this were a film with live actors but the voice performances were all the same, do you think it would be different? Would seeing their actual facial expressions kind of elevate those voices? Or would you, I wonder if it would still feel kind of flat when the main characters are doing their thing?
Maybe, but one thing I have to say about it being voice acting and puppets is, I'm going to say this without any spoilers, I feel like if this movie was live action, it's just two films that have already been made, smashed into one.
Yeah.
So I think the puppet thing is necessary to make it a unique thing. But yeah, I think you're right. I think when you have puppets, But that's also part of the deals. It's supposed to be sort of surreal.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Right? So, like, human expression is not supposed to be a part of it. It's supposed to be, like, out of, you know? Yeah. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's really hard to not spoil. The twist is very important, and it's hard to not spoil it.
I can't even, like, really, like, remember it. Like, I remember, like, what happened, but I'm like, how did it actually end?
Well, we could talk about it. We could pause.
I don't even remember. No, after that, now.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, I don't know, because I feel like it could have the potential to be like a movie that's bad but good
if it was real. But if it was live action.
I also just feel like if it were live action, I don't really know like what the budget for this was or like, you know, like.
I mean,
how
it had
much?
It's incredibly.
Yeah, well,
it was
took
apparently
a long time
real
too.
Low budget.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's why it took 7 years. It's the time, money, and idea.
Yeah,
because
they probably had to get creative and, like, you know, it took a long time to make those puppets. And they didn't, again, it was like,
I think the puppets was probably the biggest expense. And then I have a note that I was going to bring up later, but I don't know where I was going to put it. So I'll just say it here. Apparently, the director and his wife did 90% of the work on this film. They shot a bunch of it in their garage. His wife did a ton of the art design and everything.
It's very professional, too. It's very...
It looks
very
impressive.
Edited it. He shot it, edited it himself. Mm-hmm. Basically, like, having the voice actors and the puppets were, like, the only expense. And then they did everything else themselves with,
that's
like, a bit
pretty,
of help. Yeah.
That's... Dope. I mean, this is definitely, like, a labor of love art film situation.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
I just think also, like you're saying, you know, with the budget being low, I just don't know if they could have done like most of the things that they did in that movie. Like, I feel like it would have been completely different.
Oh, like special effects and gore.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you already are making it fake in quotation marks, then you can really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I don't think it would necessarily like have to be terrible, like guaranteed. Oh no. But at the same time, I just don't think it would have been like the same movie at all. And they wouldn't have been able to do like half of the things they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, the voice acting I thought was interesting and then also kind of one of the critiques I had. But then I think the other main critiques that we all kind of talked about were specifically related to the plot.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard to talk about that so much without spoiling the ending, but we're going to try to do that because the twist is important and it would suck if you're planning on watching this to have that ruin. So we're going to try not to do that.
Yeah.
So Les Hackle, the main character, he's an alcoholic loser. He lives with his parents. He's in AA. He's got a dead-end job.
Everyone hears voices, right? In your head. When you fall down, the voices laugh at you. When you succeed, they tell you what a hero you are. Or more likely that you just got lucky this time. Next time, well. But always this running commentary. Right? And that's what's so great about drinking. So alluring, I mean. Shuts up all the voices.
His mom seems like a real asshole also.
She's an asshole, yeah.
Asshole.
She is.
No, she's a battle axe. That's a phrase I've been trying to bring.
Oh,
she's battle
axe.
Yeah, like, I mean, I get it. I fuck with her turtleneck. Always with the lady in a turtleneck. But, like, she just needs to kick her son out if she hates him that much. That's just my opinion.
So here's the issue. There really isn't anything likable about Les.
Right.
And it's kind of hard to follow a whole movie, at least for me, with a character that you don't give a shit about.
This just gave me a light bulb moment.
Okay.
Okay, so this goes back to what you were just saying. The voice acting versus if it was live action. Beau is afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Joaquin Phoenix just fucking... not likable, but he
love
just
him.
Carries it because he's got that thing.
Yeah.
His performance is so good.
It's incredible. So, and this is kind of the same dude, but maybe that is where the puppet detracts because you don't have that like pathos or whatever. Like, yeah, you don't give a shit. He keeps, anytime he can save his own skin, he does instead of helping someone else. Until later, you're right, later on, he kind of has feelings for Chelsea, the woman he meets. So he starts to be a little more.
Yeah. And with that guy, too, it like makes him drag all those people in the fan. Like, he won't do what he wants. Like, he won't help him. And then that guy's head explodes. Like, Les won't help him because he's like,
and
I don't
want to
do this anymore.
It's at the beginning. And it's just like, yeah. So I think, yeah, that is the main problem, though, with viewing it is you're like, this guy is hard. And then there's some parts of it, like I was saying, that the puppets bring something because it is sort of a story that you've seen before. And so this incredible talent, these incredible, the labor of love, the puppets, all of it, you're like, and this is the story that, yeah, I don't know. It's really impressive. But that is what I kind of think. It's like you have this incredible amount of creativity, but the plot is not that creative. I mean, it's weird. A lot of weird shit happens. It's like you throw the kitchen sink in.
Well, yeah, like kind of in the apex, the feral apex of this film where everything is really crazy. It's hard not to get sort of absorbed into all the crazy shit that's happening. But then here's another note, and this is also not a spoiler. We have this wild, gore-filled, chaotic storyline, and it ultimately ends up not really mattering that much when you find out what's going on. So it kind of like...
Exactly.
When it resolves, it kind of negates all of the crazy shit you've been going through with the characters. And for me, that's kind of it kind of dampens the effect.
So are we just saying that we didn't like the ending? There's one thing about the ending that I really liked, though.
Well, we can get into that in our thoughts and feelings, I guess.
No, I guess so. But yeah, I just, it's hard to like fully talk about this movie because I do think it's important to not spoil.
Yeah.
Buggy doesn't remember, so she's doing a great job.
Yeah, I don't even know exactly what happened. Buggy's afraid. I want to like play devil's advocate just because I don't know, like I'm going to be completely honest, like the story itself wasn't like drawing me in.
That's what,
the entire time.
Yeah, no.
Mainly I do think it's because Les, like I just didn't like really care about him as a character, and I wasn't really like rooting for him. I kind of like felt for him though, in the sense of like I was so confused, just as confused as he was. So I was like, man, you and me both, Les. I'm fucking confused. But I don't really like think the plot was like the problem, like necessarily. I don't exactly know how to describe it because I mean, I think it's, they did add a bunch of creative stuff that like I hadn't seen before. And maybe that's because it was through the medium of puppets.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the story was like cool in concept. I like the kind of like stories where it's a normal person and then a bunch of weird fucking shit just happens
and
to them.
I mean, there's fucking aliens. Like, there's not just like, oh, this guy has a, it's like there's aliens,
there's like
murders,
government conspiracies.
There's conspiracy, the world is falling apart.
Yeah, like
the president is assassinated.
The president is assassinated. One can only fucking hope.
It almost feels like maybe it's that there's too much, like there's too much stuff they put in it. That's I kind of get it because, again, like if I had the freedom to create
the
weirdest puppet movie ever, I definitely do a bunch of weird shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like I think the plot wasn't like unoriginal or like boring, but I do agree with the fact that like Les just as a main character just wasn't doing it for me. Like,
it's not boring, it's just kind of weirdly flat, which is hard to explain when you put all this like incredible talent and cool kind of innovative stuff and it's wild, but somehow it's still like flat.
I think it's like a stylistic choice too, like
make it that way. I'm perfect.
Yeah, like I think that's kind of part of it, because I feel like the biggest way to describe this movie is just like uncomfortable. A lot of it's just really uncomfortable. There's a lot of weird uncomfortable like moments and dialogue, and like everyone is just kind of strange in general. So like it kind of does feel like a stylistic choice. It's just that's not for everybody. And it's just, like, not one of those movies I feel like you're like, man, I'm going to watch this a bunch more times.
We're
it's kind of like...
You're hitting thoughts and feelings.
Once is enough.
Okay. So, couple other random notes about the storyline, I guess, kind of, or maybe stylistic. But as you noted, there's, like, these Beetlejuice doors that are weird portals into different realities. So we even have like a sandworm type creature that appears at one point. So totally. I think there's definitely a Beetlejuice reference there.
Mm-hmm, which is cool.
Which makes sense because there's some kind of puppet stuff in Beetlejuice. Yeah. So I could see that. And then we talked about there's some like mutant alien babies near the end. And I think that's very much a nod to Cronenberg's The Brood.
Yeah, The Brood.
Yeah, I think they even call him a brood or something they in do. The film.
Yeah, yeah, the word. I remember you said brood.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting. And the final thing I think I want to touch on specifically related to the movie is just the gore in it. Because there is some crazy gore in this. And you would think the fact that these are puppets, that might lessen the impact. But I thought the use of blood and gore was actually quite effective.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty gross. Like the second traumatic scene that happens that you noted was that Les and Sal execute this entire suburban family, which is...
It was rough.
Yeah, very rough. There's a scene, that scene you mentioned where Les and Mr. Salk happen upon a pile of dead bodies in this warehouse, and they have to feed them into what looks like giant industrial fans, and all the blood and viscera is being filtered down into these storage tanks. That's pretty gross, and it actually kind of grosses you out, even though it's just puppet effects, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I sometimes don't remember gore the way the two of you do.
Yeah, I'm kind of a gore hound.
I think like you guys are like really impressed by it, and I'm kind of like,
because it's
that's
just
the part where I'm like, oh,
I don't know why. It's just, I don't know if fun's the right word, but it is just like, it's cool, especially when you watch horror movies so much, to see like different. Someone find a way to gross you out, yeah. Or also to see like cool things where you're like, I never even thought about that. That's so,
yeah,
that's such a good idea that you have. And also, it just looks really dope. Like Cody's saying, it just, all the gore was done really well and effectively. And you can just tell, like, they took so much care into all of those, like, little things.
Yeah, this and movie it paid off. The detail, the attention to detail.
Yes, it looks really great. And the gore looks really great. And I was like, I am impressed by that. This is good job, yeah. Guys. Good job.
Okay, final topic to talk about here before we get down to business. This came out basically recently.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it doesn't seem to have gained a super wide viewership, but I'm always hesitant to consider new movies as gem hunt picks because yeah. You never know when they're just going to take off. Whereas movies that are 10, 20, 30 years old, if they're sitting there with a limited amount of views on IMDb or Letterboxd or whatever, and they're hard to find, it's safe to assume that these are potential gems because someone would have found them and blew them up at some point. So I was willing to give this one a shot, just considering that it did play at festivals. It's been out for a while. It hasn't really blown up yet. So I thought it would be a fun new one. But what do you think? Can new movies be gems if there's still this potential for them to get super popular?
So I picked this movie and I pushed for this idea. And I think I'm coming away with the conclusion that you're right. And that time, because, and this is sort of a later, we're going to, it has less than 500 votes on IMDb. And it has like a lot of famous names attached to it. And that was kind of my argument for why, you know, and
it was
we
a
don't,
good argument. Yeah.
We don't have time out. Like how long since release date as a criteria. So technically it's like within the bounds, right? But I think you are right. I think like the thing about a gem is it like we rented this and it was on the new release shelf at Movie Madness. I don't think it like disqualifies it, but I think there is something to like movies need time to like breathe or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Boogie?
I don't know. I think like it doesn't really matter how new or old the film is. Like I do think it's true. Like you never know when they're gonna like blow up or become super popular. But at the same time, like I feel like it doesn't really matter because at the time we're discussing it, it's not popular.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, like personally, I do think it's harder to find modern movies that are gems, and I don't like exactly know why. maybe it's just like the style of the way the movie is, or like the fact that I feel like, I don't know, like there's just less like actual special effects, and it's a lot more like CGI, more modern. And I also just feel like,
you know,
low budget movies that are new usually are just really bad and look really bad.
Yeah. Which this didn't.
And this didn't. Like, this is an exception. This movie's like, again, it looks really good. Like, it looks super cool, and it is using, you know, special effects in a really creative way. But I think why that's why it's kind of hard to find newer ones because that are great.
Well, and so this is the thing. It's not like, okay, we got a screener copy of Sinners and only 20 people have seen it.
Right.
And so we're going to vote on it as a gem, you know.
Right. Because and then next week it comes out and it makes
obviously
$500 billion.
Sometime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, again, I think also like the factors that we like use to vote on films, like even if it were a newer movie, it would still not like it wouldn't be known. It'd still have like that low of votes. It still like wouldn't be like there wouldn't be so many reviews on it. It wouldn't be like, you know.
And the point, I guess, the point of this podcast is for people to watch movies that maybe they haven't watched. So,
like, get out of their comfort zone. And I don't know. Again, like what I said.
These guys put so much work into this, and people should watch, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I am basically, like, you know, torn in half about it.
Yeah. Totally. I just think as long as it's not a gem when we discover it, and it's not, like, obviously something that's, like, expected to be popular,
like we're not gonna do Suspiria or something.
Yeah, like it's like, oh, okay, well that makes sense. It's still like hidden. It's not like people are talking about it.
Yeah,
you know, the maybe like some random
weird,
blog. Though.
Newness is weird.
It's just harder to find.
Nudeness.
But I also my last movie was also new. You know, so I just want to announce here: the next time I pick a movie, I'm gonna step back into the past, and so. Everyone who recommends movies to me, find me an old one. This is the first time I think that I did one that wasn't a recommendation, by the way. No, there might have been one earlier.
Yeah, there might have been one other one.
Alucarda.
Yeah, I think
But mostly everything is somebody said, hey, check this out. So what do you think? Where do you land on the newness?
I think I'm willing to be flexible for new movies that are out and haven't seemed to gain any traction.
And this
yet.
Is streaming a lot of places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm definitely willing to give new movies a shot if they're not like already generating buzz. Kind of like, you know, maybe it just came out a week ago, but there's already 100 critics that's reviewed it.
Right.
And
that's different.
People just haven't got a chance to get through their film rotation yet. So by next week, it's going to have 10,000 views.
But the fact that this did festivals in 2023, came out in 2024, and Jordan Peele is attached to it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the other people are very important, but he is like one of the buzziest people in horror, you know?
Yeah.
And it didn't have. But I still, there's something about newness that is...
Yeah. I think also it has to do with
it's a little challenging.
Yeah.
This movie like... actually like did they try to like put it out there like, oh, this is a new movie, like this movie, for example, this puppet movie, like I didn't hear anything about it. I don't think there was like many articles about it or like promos or trailers or anything,
or
like, that
we didn't
I heard
see
of.
It like come through like of like the Hollywood or Clinton Street
we didn't get
Cinemagic.
I don't think
like,
we had a screening
played,
here.
It might have played at the Hollywood. I feel like it might
maybe.
Be something that people in one of my film classes Movie Madness talked about actually. But I don't know.
Yeah. So I think that's relevant too. Because so many movies come out all the fucking time.
I know.
You know, that are new, that no one hears about ever.
But we have our little, like, you know, thing we travel in where we do hear about a lot of things that are.
I nerd out on a lot of blogs. So
yeah,
I generally hear about.
Yeah, and you heard about it, right?
I had heard about it, but I, for some reason, it just flew over my head. It was one
it
of
was
those things that I didn't clock. When I read about it.
Oh, clock
it.
We're never going to have an episode without
clock.
It. And tonight I want to introduce Muff.
Yeah, she's been really into talking about that. And she said something really gross earlier that I don't want to say.
Speaking of Muff, let's do a quick...
One thing gross? Yeah. Is it one gross thing?
Like exceptionally gross.
Oh, wow. All right.
Let's do a quick therapist. Thoughts and feelings on this. Who wants to start?
I picked it. I'm going to start, and I'm going to say, I didn't like it. And I felt bad about not liking it. But then when I like dug into it, I liked it more. Okay. I just had one of those experiences where I was like, man, I'm so impressed by all this stuff, but I did not enjoy watching this movie. I do struggle with things that are not live action. Maybe that was part of it. I felt while we were watching it that like this is so much incredible talent and kind of a flat story. But then I feel like it might be one of those ones where if I did watch it again, knowing what was going to happen and knowing all the stuff I know about the making of it, I might actually like it more.
Yeah.
So that's my thoughts and feelings.
Yeah, I'm kind of like conflicted too, just because I really liked how this movie looked. And I thought it, again, everyone who worked on it seemed really incredible. And I just fuck with people with no budget doing something creative, or the budget
that
thing isn't like,
looked, no, but no, we've had some low budget movies that were total shit. Right. And this was a beautiful, well done.
Yeah.
Movie.
And that's not like the most relevant thing, but I just like random people doing creative shit and then being able to like, yeah, like actually make it happen. Mm-hmm. I always respect that. So it's always kind of like shitty when I don't like the like the final project or like the finished project. Because I feel like, yeah, I probably would never have a desire to watch this movie again. But I'm not necessarily like upset I did. I wasn't like, wow, I can't wait to tell people about this. I was just sort of like, this movie is really cool looking and I wish I liked it more because I really like the people who made it and I like that they made this happen.
Totally.
So I feel bad kind of. I'm like, damn it.
I know, right?
It's like the other movie that was low budget with like that douchey guy who made it.
I Need You Dead.
Yeah, like, sorry.
Which I also
sorry,
picked.
Douchey guy.
No.
But like.
We got to stop talking shit on that guy.
I know.
I
feel so
No,
bad.
I was impressed by that too, but it's just
I feel
something...
like I'm cyberbullying him. It's just like.
You're cyberbullying
kind of the I'm flaming his ass. It's just kind of like the opposite where it's like. I really like these guys and I'm rooting for them.
Oh, like the other, like that's
I
how we
the
felt
guys.
About the Attic Expeditions. We liked the people, so we liked them. Once we had more information, which you can't watch movies like that, though. You can't be like,
right.
My cousin made this, so I like it.
Yeah, it's because that's not really the point. And sorry to that man. You know, I think that movie was cool.
Maybe he was nervous in those interviews.
I don't know. It's just whatever was going on there. was going on there.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I'm never going to talk about him again.
He went to your school.
I hope
my
he's
school
doing
and
well.
School. Yeah, me too.
And still making movies.
And learning.
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar boat as you guys. There were a lot of things I liked about this. I was invested in it throughout the middle as things were going crazy. And I loved the puppetry and the way it looked. And then when it ended, I just felt like I came away feeling flat, like I didn't get as much out of it as I was hoping I was going to get. Mm-hmm. But then, like you, also, as I did some research and I watched some interviews with the director, I started to appreciate the film a little bit more. Like the director said, there's like a range of responses. Some people love it. Some people thought it was a piece of garbage.
Oh,
and he
garbage.
Was like, I'm an unknown horror filmmaker. I don't want to make a safe movie. I want to make something volatile that challenges his audiences.
That's
so
cool.
I'm fine with the negative reviews because I'm just trying to do it. And he really kind of seemed like a genuine down-to-earth person that wasn't like, I'm doing this because it's the most groundbreaking thing that's ever done. He was just like, I had this idea to make a puppet movie and I wanted to make a puppet horror movie. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And the fact that it was pretty low budget and him and his wife did most of the work, I thought was really cool. But yeah, ultimately I wish I liked it more, which is one of those things that's just a gut response or a heart response where you walk away from a movie and you're like, shit, I didn't like that as much as I wanted to.
This is it's like just maybe we're just being humans and it's like you're someone who loves art, you know, and it does whatever it does to you, but then you see the human behind the art and you love it more or less based on, like, maybe that's just a totally normal response.
Yeah, I mean, this guy just seems really cool, and I like that he did this thing.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, the Roman Polanski conundrum.
His wife seems awesome, too. Shout out to his wife. She seems like a very supportive lady.
No, she's a worker, too, though. Not supportive. Like, she's in the trenches.
Also is a filmmaker, they, like, collaborate. And so they made a couple indies that were, like, super, like, just low budget at home. And this was sort of their first big feature that had like a lot of production and people attached to it.
It's sort of like, you know, the Addams Family. Like, we haven't talked much about the Addams Family. Maybe we watched
probably
the movie.
Should at some point.
Have you watched any of their movies?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, you need good. To. They make these low budget things. They made some bigger budget things, but it's like you can just feel their like heart and soul of this. It's like if Heidi and Dave and Humphrey, you know what I mean? Like Humphrey were in a movie making collaborative together or something. Anyway, sorry.
There you
I can
to
see
be
the.
Sorry.
I can see the. Like, I feel the hook coming.
Oh no! I was just assessing my notes.
Okay.
Okay. Let's do a quick obscurity rating on this motherfucker. IMDb votes 479. That's pretty low. But on the flip side, IMDb critics 65.
Is that
so
high?
I think it's a little bit high, kind of relative. I mean, it's obviously. People saw this at festivals and wanted to write about it.
Oh, right.
You know.
Jordan Peele.
Totally. Rotten Tomatoes reviews, 14. That's a bit higher than normal. And obviously, we know that Rotten Tomatoes skews a little more towards newer movies, so that makes sense to me. And then availability and streaming, as we noted, this is on about 11 different platforms with a DVD and a Blu-ray out there. All in all, with our rating scale, this has an obscurity rating of 5.5, so just above average at this point in time. Okay, are you guys ready to do the thing that we do?
Yeah.
Where we shit and we poo.
Oh, God. The musical.
It's shitting time.
It's time to vote.
My generation will put it right. Okay. On a count of three, we will close our eyes and our dog will bark. And we will give a thumbs up or a thumbs down about whether we thought this was a gem or a turd or somewhere in between. Here are we a goa. 3, 2, 1.
That hurts.
We did a bad thing today.
No! I thought at least maybe one of us would.
Be held Here's the thing.
We
it's
should be
not,
held accountable.
Shut Wait. The fuck up. The dog thinks so too. I think it's... Okay, we had three thumbs down.
We had three thumbs down.
But I kind of like...
It's
I don't
not
want to call
turd.
It a turd.
It's
I
not don't. A turd. It's not. It's just not a gem.
By our voting system.
We just none of us liked it.
That's really it.
But we liked a lot
but
of things
appreciated
about
it.
It. Yeah, no, and this one is one that kind of makes me feel bad, like a bad person. This movie had a lot going for it, but it wasn't a gem.
Yeah, I think more so I don't feel bad. I'm just like, I don't think our ranking system like accurately describes this because it's just like, it's not a movie any of us like, but I don't think it sucks
but
by any
means.
But I
won't not tell people to, like,
right.
I like, might tell someone to watch it for the amazing puppetry. I might be like, you should check this out for the craftsmanship, you know? Yeah.
That makes sense.
Or like, anyway, I might watch it again.
I guess
if I knew
someone that was really into like puppet work or something, I'd be like, hey, you should check this out.
Or
so,
even
yeah.
just like, it's kind of a marvel. It's like, it's, yeah. Oh, I feel bad. But yeah, that didn't feel good.
No, I just, I think, I don't feel bad.
Sometimes you have to feel bad.
I just, I'm confident.
I don't ever want to feel bad.
No, I'm confident in the fact that this movie isn't a turd.
It's not a turd.
Not
a turd.
A gem.
Yeah, I guess that's something we never addressed about whether we watch a movie that we appreciate, but then we all vote it down.
Well, some people have been doing half thumbs repeatedly.
Yeah, maybe we should have like a third thing for like exceptions where we're like, there's like a middle way.
It's somehow. Too new to vote on.
No, it's my way or the highway.
All right.
Turd.
Damn it.
Okay.
A splash.
It is a turd.
Splash sound. Enter splash.
You know what time it is now?
Oh, yeah.
It's time for special time.
Special time.
Yay.
Yay. you got?
So, what I'm going to talk about today, because it's my special time.
It is your special time.
And it's for me, is having an experience IRL, which means in real life. Do you know that?
No way.
So, what I want to talk about is the Skeleton Key Auditorium.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That place.
Which is this kind of amazing Museum of the Weird in downtown Portland, Oregon, which is on fire. No, I'm kidding. Downtown Portland, Oregon is not on fire. Don't believe the hype. Well, I mean, people, I do sometimes see multiple butts and shits every day, but that's fine.
That's fire, but in the cool way.
So it's this, like, this lovely couple. I never knew their last. I know them, but their names are Amber Victoria and Daniel Debris. I didn't know that was their names. Debris. It was on Belmont for a long time, which is in Southeast Portland. This is, again, I'm getting hyper local, but now it's downtown Portland, Oregon. It's on Southwest 10th and Salmon Streets. But it's like this store where you can buy all this weird goth shit, but it's also a museum. And the museum is what I'm talking about.
There's some fun stuff in there.
It's so cool. And it's 2,500 square feet of exhibits. But you wouldn't, when you walk in, you think it's real small, but then you get like admitted to the museum and it's a whole kind of labyrinth of all this cool shit. It costs $15 to enter, but less if you're a student or a senior or a kid. And it's just a fucking lovely, weird, horror, goth, vampire experience. And there's like objects that are haunted. There's like vampire shit. They feature local artists. In the store, they sell a lot of cool, weird taxidermy stuff, which it's as a vegetarian dope. Is not my like favorite. I did get my niece a taxidermy rat.
Yeah, which great.
She was excited about that. But no, the museum is super cool. It's this little kind of hidden gem. No, it is, though. That is a fun. You could take your family for $50 and spend a couple hours in there, and it's way better than Six Flags and closer to home.
Yeah, it's cute. And they have a lot of cool shit. And I don't know how they all got it, but it's cool.
And they feed, yeah, I think I said this before, but they like feature local artists every month. And some of the stuff is very old, which is cool. Yeah. And yeah, the current exhibits are Vampire History, The History of Tarot, Circus Sideshow, The Tragedy of Charles W. Post, Frankenstein's Laboratory. Frankenstein's Library. Library.
He probably had a library too.
He probably did. Uranium Glass, Radium Clocks, Secret Societies, Local Legends, Paranormal and Haunted Items. And the artist showcased is Matt Hopkins right now. Spirit Board Exhibit and Victorian Mourning History. Cool. Like mourning with a U. So like death. Yeah,
it's
anyway, a cool one. It's fucking cool and people should go there.
Yeah.
And I just want to... It's the season in this part of the country where we go outside and we go to places and we're not trapped in our homes because of the weather. So go outside, go to your local museum, explore some shit, and go to the Skeleton Key Auditorium.
Hell yeah. I'm sad I haven't been there yet. I love stuff like this.
I know you didn't go with us.
I'm excited to go when I get a chance.
Come join us.
I never get to go downtown because I work in the fucking suburbs. And then on the weekend, it's like, I want to go downtown on the weekend.
Oh, by the way, they're open Wednesday through Sunday. And I have one more thing to add, which I'm going to get in trouble for. But Cody is done with chemotherapy.
No, I'm not. I'm doing it again.
No,
I'm voluntarily signing up for
sometimes
more.
Sometimes that happens, so it's not funny. But
he liked it so much, he wants to keep
going. The course is done. He doesn't have to go to the doctor for a month, which will free him up to have in real life experiences.
Well, like I do have to go to the doctor because it caused my dick to fall off and I have to go get a new dick sewn on.
For fuck's sake. No,
screw on.
He doesn't have to go to the doctor. He has to go once this month and once next month, not every fucking day or three times a week or whatever. So there's a respite.
Ooh, respite.
Respite.
Yay! I'm going to spit on my rest.
Whatever that means. Anyway, finally some good news. But also, yeah, go out, explore your city, do some things. Explore your fucking suburb. There's things in the suburbs. People have yard sales and...
go fuck. Go do drugs.
Fuck, do drugs.
Rob people.
Be gay and do crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
non-conclusive, but you can be gay and do crimes. Don't let them tell you can't.
I mean, separate.
You can be gay.
Separate, but equal.
And do a crime. Or happens.
Or both. You know?
I know it seems like only straight people, because it usually is.
Well, yeah. if you're talking about...
anything is possible.
Violent crimes are straight people.
All crimes are straight people.
Okay.
Anyway.
I got an update here. I have selected my next movie for the episode. And so I wanted to announce it here in case you want to get a head start. I have picked a movie called The Black Room from 1982, which is the year I was born.
Oh.
And all I know about it is that it's sleazy and grimy and weird. And it's starring a youngish Christopher McDonald, which is
a total coincidence. Yeah, weird.
Total coincidence. I picked it before I had even looked at the cast of this movie that we were watching tonight. And I was like, oh, holy shit. Both of these movies have Christopher McDonald.
6 degrees of Christopher McDonald.
And, you know, be warned, there's multiple movies called Black Room. So if you're going to try to watch this one, it's The Black Room from 1982. And that's what we'll be reviewing next time. So that's going to be fun. Any closing thoughts before we shit the bed?
I just realized who Christopher McDonald is.
He's in
everything.
Yeah.
He is in Happy Gilmore.
He's in Weeds.
And in Grease 2.
He's in Hacks. He's in Hacks. He's the casino owner in Hacks.
Yeah.
I mean the big hotel owner in Hacks, yeah.
Totally.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. Puppets for everybody.
Puppets for all.
We have puppets living everywhere. And they're roaming around and they're murdering people.
And they're human-sized.
Have a great evening from the Gem Hunt Dirt Dogs. Happy 1 year anniversary.
Woo!
Yay! We made it!
Dirt Dogs on a Gem Hunt. ¶¶